Good morning. I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect it as 9:04 a.m. on Wednesday, April 20th, 22. Present today are Representative Thompson, Representative Lavon, Vice Chair Ortiz, Co-Chair Foster, Representative Josephson, Representative Wohl, myself, Co-Chair Merrick, and we have Senator Stevens with us here today. Welcome. This morning we will consider Senate Bill 71, Arts Council Plates and Manage Art, and House Bill 21, adding a faculty member to the Board of Regents. We will start with Senate Bill 71, Council on Arts, Plates, and Manage Art by Senator Stevens. This is the first hearing on this bill. Welcome back, Senator. If you could place yourself on the record and begin your presentation. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Gary Stevens, District P. Thanks for hearing this bill again this morning, our first time this morning. I appreciate your hearing it. Senate Bill 81 has to do with the Arts Council. It actually came at the request of the Alaska State Council on the Arts, and that's why we have been working with them on it. It is a result of some complications that occurred in their budget structure that happened during the 2019 budget cycle. And what it does, Madam Chair, is provide some stability to their organization of the Arts Council, an opportunity to be less reliant on our general fund. Who can disagree with that? This is not about license plates. It does create a new plate, and not just about license plates. It only amends the existing plate program to provide the Arts Council with some additional revenue from their supporters. It also provides the means for possible legal representation from time to time, consistent with other state agencies. The bill intends to hold harmless their private fundraising efforts. Hold harmless their private fundraising efforts by setting up a new fund called the Arts and Cultural Investment Fund. And that fund is for those privately raised funds to be funneled and managed by the Arts Council itself. It also makes the competitive four-year artistic license plate project optional instead of making it mandatory, and it allows the option for the Arts Council to compensate the winning license plate artists a very small award. And that's pretty much it, Madam Chairman.
Great, thank you. Questions from the committee? Seeing none, we will move to our invited testifier. Thank you.
Thank you.
Today with us, we have Ben Brown, the chair of the Alaska State Council on the Arts. Welcome, Mr. Brown. If you could place yourself on the record and please begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, and good morning, members of the House Finance Committee. I am Benjamin Brown, and I'm the chairman of the Alaska State Council on the Arts. And I want to thank Senator Stevens for introducing this legislation and for synopsizing it for you. Mr. Lampkin, I know, is also a wealth of information about this piece of legislation. We've been working on it for a couple of years. And Andrea Noble, who's the executive director of the Alaska State Council on the Arts, is on the line via teleconference from Anchorage, so she can also provide more information. But if I may, Madam Chair, Senator Stevens described very succinctly what the bill is about. It's more than just license plates. Our license plate program has been a tremendous success since its inception. We actually worked with Representative Christ Tompkins and former Senator Bill Stoltz many years ago to get that program on the books. Before we held our first contest, we actually changed it to make our artistic license plates one of the three default plates that are available at no additional charge to Alaskans when they register a vehicle. And it has just become one of the most popular things that DMV does, among the many things DMV does. And so we're delighted to see those wonderful plates out there on so many cars. I always like to tell people they're on old cars and new cars and fancy cars and not very fancy cars and cars with bumper stickers representing the entire political spectrum, because they really, I think, unify Alaskans in celebrating the natural beauty of the place where we're all so fortunate to live. So because they're so popular, it seemed wise to us to maybe look at a way to create some revenue with that program. And so what the bill will allow us to do is place a modest surcharge, up to $50 is what the statute will allow for, but through regulation, which we will adopt under the Administrative Procedure Act, we're looking at a much smaller number, because price elasticity of demand, I think a $50 surcharge, we would cut off the flow of plates out to cars. And what we want to do is try to find that sweet spot where we're generating a meaningful amount of revenue, as Senator Stevens said, to reduce our reliance on undesignated general funds and have some designated general fund revenue coming in. In order to receive our allocation as a state arts agency from the National Endowment for the Arts, we have to match dollar for dollar about a $700,000 grant that comes up to us every year as part of a three-year partnership agreement with the federal arts agency. And it's possible we could generate between $50,000 and $100,000. I mean, you know, don't quote me on that, but we just want to see where this goes if this legislation can become law this year. We've worked closely with the Dunleavy administration. Governor Dunleavy, I think, is ready and willing and excited to sign this bill if we can get it to his desk. So we're hopeful that will happen this legislative session. The other provisions of the bill, and so I'm happy to answer questions about license plates if people want to talk about that. We talked about that a lot in the prior Committee of Referral, House State Affairs. We had some very thorough and exhaustive conversations there, which you probably didn't have time to watch on Gavel, Alaska. But I'm happy to rehash anything we talked about there as to license plates or the rest of the bill, and I'll pause there, Madam Chair, and ask if that's something any of the members would like to talk about now.
Thank you. Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I love a good license plate discussion. So just school me up, and maybe this is coming, but you mentioned the artistic plates that people can get for free of charge. I know when you go to the DMV, and they either give you a plate or give you a choice, but and I know there's other plates that people pay a surcharge for, and there's many of them out there, and the monies go towards a certain cause. So it's my understanding that the artistic plate right now would move from one category to another, and that it would be one of the surcharge plates that the up to $50 would go towards Alaska State Council of the Arts, or question one, yeah.
Yeah, so Madam Chairman, Representative Wool, actually no, we would not be moving where it is in the statute. Where it is now, the artistic plates would remain one of the three default plates, if you will, but the surcharge would come in, and we're the only state agency that has a plate. And so that's what kind of differentiates us from the university alumni plates, which are for the foundation, or the NRA, or Right to Life. I mean, there are causes that have special dedicated plates, but we're the only state agency. So that's why we like where we're located in the plate statute, and we don't want to move that. We just want to put this ability as an agency to impose this surcharge to generate a little additional revenue. So and Representative Price-Tompkins, being one of the main sources of creating this program initially, is really was very insistent before the bill moved out of House State Affairs that we not change the way the mechanism works now. So if someone goes in to get an artistic about a new license plate on their car, it's going to be exactly the same after this, except for the modest surcharge. It will not change the mechanics of that and make it like getting a university alumni plate.
Thank you. Let the record reflect at 9:11. We were joined by Representative Johnson. Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So you said it wouldn't change, except there'd be a modest surcharge. So that is a change. So if I want an artistic license plate as one of my default plates, there would be a surcharge on top of that that would go towards the state agency, whereas if I just want a regular yellow plate, it's whatever the standard fee is. So like the university one or NRA one that has a surcharge that goes to a nonprofit, this would be like those where there's a surcharge, it goes to the state agency. But it's still available, but it's not no additional charge.
Madam Chair, that's correct, Representative Wool. I'm sorry I didn't explain that as clearly as you did.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Foster.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Are folks who currently have the artistic plate, are they grandfathered in, or at the next renewal would they start paying the surcharge, or how does that work?
Representative Foster, through the chair, the way it works is you only pay whatever the surcharge is when you initially get the actual physical plate. When you re-register your car, you're just paying for the little stickers. And, you know, you pay a surcharge if you do that in person. If you do it online, you don't. And if you don't do it, then you get a ticket for not having a current registration. So, no, if someone wanted to keep the existing moon over the mountains with the Aurora Borealis plate, they would not have to pay anything additional. Only upon getting whatever the new plate in the next iteration of the contest is would trigger the payment of that surcharge.
So this surcharge, when I think of surcharge, I think of you've got the regular registration amount, and then the surcharge would be on top of that, which would go to the Arts Council. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Foster, that is correct. So, and again, we're envisioning something in the $3 range, and so instead of paying $25, you'd pay $28. You'd pay $38 if you walked in and did it for not doing it online, which is what DMV is encouraging people to do now. You would not be paying an extra $50 or $100 like some of the other so-called specialty plates, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Lebon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, that was my question that Representative Foster asked. So you're purchasing the plate. You're not renting the plate and having to pay that surcharge every registration renewal event to one-time expense for the purchaser of the plate.
Madam Chair, Representative LeBond, that's correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Johnson?
I'm on the same track, and I thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I guess I'm wondering why not. Go ahead. I mean, it seems to me like the surcharge, I mean, I guess you're I get this, that you're purchasing it, but it seems like it would make sense just to have it consistent so you don't have to, examine the record too much to every time to see if it's a new or different or so on and so forth.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, I think the way we've set it up is administratively as workable as DMV would like it to be. I mean, it tweaks the existing system the least amount necessary, but still allows us to generate revenue for the agency. And I think that's the compromise we were looking for, is to not create any sort of difficult burden. If you do it online, if you walk into a DMV office, we want it to be easy for people to do. What we are hoping, Madam Chair and Representative Johnson, is that we have a contest and we have Alaskan artists submit new designs, and then we have a panel of people select four finalists, and we have online voting for those. We had over 15,000 people vote to select the current plate, and we want to see that kind of robust interest again. I think that will generate more than enough demand for whatever the new design is, that people are going to actually want to go out and say, I will pay that extra $3 to get that new plate in my car because I like it that much. That's what we're hoping.
Thank you. Let the record reflect, at 9:15 a.m. we were joined by Representative Carpenter, at 9:16 a.m. by Representative Rasmussen. Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So you mentioned $3. Is that the fee that you're shooting for with this bill? And I guess at first blush it seems low. That's like a cup of coffee or less. And if you're trying to generate, is all the revenue going towards the artistic contest, or it goes to other purposes in the ASCA?
Madam Chair, Representative Wohl, I was not the best economics student as an undergraduate, but I do remember price elasticity of demand. And if you raise the price on something, people will often pay less for it, unless it's a luxury good, and then sometimes if you raise the price, they'll buy more of it. But license plates are not a luxury good. So they're a necessity. They're part and parcel of just having a car, which is a necessity of life. So we will adopt regulations through the Administrative Procedure Act, which will require us to promulgate the draft regs, and then we'll have a hearing. So we're actually going to have a public process where we can ask people, does $3 seem reasonable? And if people want to say, charge me more, we might revisit that. So it really is just kind of what we're envisioning now would make the most sense. Mr. Lampkin may be able to talk more about this. I think he got some more recent numbers from DMV. But the higher the surcharge for a specialty plate, the less of them sell. So we just don't want to get into that zone. We want to find a sweet spot. Representative Wolf, through the chair.
Mr. Lampkin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Tim Lampkin, staff of Senator Stevens, through the chair, Representative Wohl, and for the committee's benefit, in your package should be a document that's labeled demand or the Council on the Arts license plates. I want to clarify, there's a lot of discussion on this surcharge. It is indeed a fact that the council, it behooves them in their own best interest not to make that fee too high. We put a up to $50 amount in the bill so that we would give them the flexibility through regulation to change that number over time, rather than having to come before you repeatedly year after year to change that dollar amount. So we certainly recognize that 50 is going to be startling or perhaps too high, and that's therefore why we're talking about probably $3 to maybe $5 to start this off and see how it works.
Thank you. And my notes show that there were three votes out of committee to amend this bill. Do you know what those suggestions were?
Madam Chair, I believe, and I can't obviously speak for the members who put the amendment recommendation when they signed the report from House State Affairs, there was some discussion about other components of the bill than the license plate part. I don't think there was any dissatisfaction with it in its current form. In fact, there was a slight amendment that cleaned up the language a little bit, but it's pretty de minimis. There was a lot of question about legal counsel and making sure that in our enabling statute it's clear that the Attorney General serves as legal counsel for the State Council on the Arts, and I can answer questions about that. And there were some questions about Section 6 of the bill, the Arts and Cultural Investment Fund. If I had to hazard a guess, I would guess that was probably what some of the members of House State Affairs thought needed to be amended. I would respectfully disagree with them. I don't think it needs to be amended. We spent a great deal of time before this bill passed out of the Senate working with Ledge Finance and Ledge Legal and OMB to make sure we were not creating a dedicated fund, but a designated fund. And so this new subsection of 4427059, it's section 7 of the bill, would create this Arts and Cultural Investment Fund. It designates that fund. It kind of draws a ring fence around our private foundation money. And just for the benefit, Madam Chair, of the committee, we get $700,000 approximately from the state because that's what's necessary to match the investment made by the National Endowment for the Arts. But that's only about 45% of our budget. The other 55% is coming from the Rasmussen Foundation, Margaret A. Cargill Philanthropies, the Siri Foundation, and other private foundation partners. And we're the only state agency that's leveraging non-governmental money to do the work that we're doing. And we're very proud of that. And we have a higher ratio than any other state arts agency in any of the 50 states or territories. And so I'm super proud about that. I'm just not going to, you know, be shy about that. And so we just wanted, when we had the veto situation in 2019, all of the money was vetoed. We obviously were able to work with the administration and the legislature to come to a different place, and we're very grateful to be fully funded this year. But going forward in the future, we just wanted to literally draw something that was a visible fence around the foundation investment. It could still be vetoed. It's still under the Executive Budget Act. There's still full appropriation authority for the legislature. We just thought this was a good way to identify the fact that we are bringing in private funds. And so basically, again, that was a long-winded answer. I think that may be what some of the members of House State Affairs thought might need to be looked at as an amendment.
After looking at Section 6, I would think that that might have been controversial. Okay, anything further? Co-Chair Foster.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So if it's not a dedicated fund but a designated fund, is it your understanding it would be a sweepable fund?
Madam Chair, Representative Foster, we discussed sweepability at some pleasant length in the House State Affairs Committee, and I believe the answer is no, it is not sweepable, is the answer that we got. But I would, being an attorney and an arts advocate, I'm going to make sure that if someone from Ledge Finance wants to opine on that, he or she can do so. But our understanding is that it's not sweepable, and Mr. Lampkin, I think, has been in touch with those folks, and he can offer some wisdom as well.
Tim Lampkin, Staff Senator Stevens, through Mr. Co-Chair, to confirm that that certainly came up at length in the prior committee, and we had both Department of Law and Legislative Finance on record to testify accordingly that it was not sweepable.
Thank you. Follow-up?
Yes, follow-up.
What's your envisioning of capitalizing this fund? Is it the state would capitalize, or be a combination of state and private, or what's your thinking on that?
Well, as it says, Representative Foster, through the chair, the fund consists of money appropriated to the fund by the legislature and donations and other sources. So it would be all of our funds would go into this fund, and it would just be visible that that is a commingling, if you will, of state, federal, and private foundation funds that build the $3.7 million that we use. And I didn't really answer Representative Wool's question, but including the license plate revenue, all of this would go towards our grant programs, our, you know, everything that we do, the Contemporary Art Bank, arts organizations grants, the Governor's Arts and Humanities Awards, and everything else the State Council on the Arts does.
Thank you. Follow-up?
Yes, follow-up.
And what would be your envisioning of the initial capitalization from the state for the initial amounts?
Madam Chair, Representative Foster, Co-Chair Foster, it would be what our current budget allocation is. I mean, it's the approximately $3.7 million that's in the operating budget that passed the House and the Governor put in. That has not gone up or down. It's been a very consistent, pleasingly consistent and stable number this budget cycle.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Wool.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. On this page we have here that shows the distribution of different kind of plates, 2019, the artistic plate was the most popular. 2018, it's 0.2%. That's probably when it first came out, I'm guessing. And it's increased, I guess 2020 was the peak year. I know I went to the DMV and I didn't get a new plate, but I thought I was going to, and I said, which plate do I get? And they kind of said, well, whatever comes up. In other words, they didn't say, you want this one, or this one. It's sort of like whatever's at the top of the pile. So are they given out based on request only, or is it just sort of what you happen, and maybe you don't know? You looked kind of surprised when I said that. But since there's no surcharge, if there were a charge, would you anticipate some of these numbers to go down? I'm guessing yes, but guess it's a two-part question.
Madam Chair, Representative Wohl, I have not had that experience when I went, and I have an artistic license plate, but I got it personalized when they first came out. So I've not had that experience, but I would be surprised if that was normal DMV operating procedure. I think probably you ought to have been told you can have a gold one, you can have one with the bear, or you can have one with the mountains and the Aurora. I think the only thing that would change now is they'd say if you get the Aurora one, it's going to be $3 more. The other two are just a flat 25. And then I don't know to what extent each DMV employee would say, and we also have these other 15 over here, but they're a lot more expensive. The Children's Trust is 250, and you know, I'm not really sure about that. So that would be more of a question for DMV in terms of how they're training their staff, Representative Wohl, through the chair. But the goal is to make sure that they're accessible. And we're planning, when we do the new contest, we're going to get the word out about this. So people are going to hear that this new plate is coming and that there's four finalists, and we want them to vote. And then once Alaskans have voted, when the new ones hit the streets, we're going to make sure we get the word out about that.
Is that going to be ranked choice voting on those plates?
Madam Chair, I suppose it could, but not that will be at the discretion of the council. We'll put that on an agenda for a meeting, and we'll make a determination about that. We don't want to confuse people.
Or winner take all.
There you go.
Okay, further discussion before we move on to the fiscal notes. Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I just want to give one of these green sheets to Tim as this co-sponsor. My wife that passed away back in 2006 was the chairman and the head of the Fairbanks Arts Association for many years, I think 10 years. And during that period of time, the National Endowment of the Arts took her back to Washington, D.C. for 4 months, and she worked in the NEA, National Endowment of the Arts, offices in Washington, D.C., so it's got a place in my heart. So, yeah, I'm in favor of this.
Thank you for sharing that, Representative Thompson. Seeing nothing further, we will move to the fiscal notes. Mr. Brown, are you prepared to present the first fiscal note?
Actually, I'm going to ask Mr. Lampkin if he would like to do that.
Okay, I'm showing that's control code ZPPPX. Mr. Lampkin?
Brief at ease.
Brief at ease. House Finance on the record at 9:28. We have Andrea Noble online, the Executive Director of the Alaska State Council on the Arts in wonderful Eagle River. Hello, Ms. Noble. If you could place yourself on the record and review the fiscal note number 6.
Good morning, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Andrea Noble, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska State Council on the Arts. And the fiscal note that I have here in front of me is fiscal note number 6. And you'll notice that the anticipated request that we expect costs to be incurred in the department are related to the expenses of regulations work, and that is a one-time increment of $6,000. The regulations process involves Department of Law working on behalf of DED to prepare the necessary legal regulation changes to go before the State Board of Education and Early Development or the Alaska State Council on the Arts. In that case, we'll work with both. There are over 70 education-related bills, so I'm sure you've seen this figure before. Multiple bills that pass through the legislature require regulation changes. Luckily, this is the lowest estimate. There will be a cost of $6,000 associated and needed in our budget in order to meet the obligations that we set forth in regulation.
Great, thank you. Are there questions on fiscal note number 6? Seeing none, thank you, Ms. Noble, for being with us today. Next, we will move to OMB regarding fund capitalization. We have Mr. Steiniger from the Office of Management and Budget. That's control code FVAZY. Welcome back, Mr. Steiniger.
Good morning. For the record, Neil Steiniger, Director, Office of Management and Budget. Fiscal note number 4 is for fund capitalization. It is an indeterminate fiscal note as structured in order to ensure that this fund is not a dedicated fund. It requires appropriation of revenues into the fund prior to them being available to the Council of the Arts to spend without further appropriation. So that ensures that we avoid that dedicated funds clause in the Constitution and keep this fund under legislative control. This fiscal note is a placeholder for a language section item that would include the amount of that capitalization should this bill pass.
Super. Are there questions on fiscal note 4? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Steiniger. And I do not see Mr. Schmitz from the Department of Motor Vehicles, so we will go over fiscal note number 5 at a meeting in the future. So with that, any other questions regarding Senate Bill 71? Representative Carpenter and then Thompson. Oh, Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I do not see a fiscal note from Department of Law. I do see one sentence in Department of Education and Early Development in regards to the Attorney General as legal counsel for ASCA. I see Section 5 establishes the Attorney General as legal counsel. Is there an estimated cost that the Department of Law would weigh in on? I mean, I'm assuming that the Attorney General is not currently a legal counsel, and if he is a legal counsel, what would be the expected cost to the state of picking up that responsibility?
Mr. Brown?
Yes, Madam Chair. Representative Carpenter. The Department of Law is de facto counsel for the State Council on the Arts now. It's just not specified in our enabling statute. And so back in 2019, when the vetoes happened, I spent a fair amount of time talking to an assistant attorney general who represents the Department of Education and Early Development, where we are administratively housed. And so just by way of background, she was also advising the Deputy Commissioner of Administration, who was doing everything she could to shut the agency down, you know, to implement the vetoes. So that assistant attorney general was having to advise two clients with rather diametrically opposed positions, and that's a violation of the model of the Alaska Rules of Professional Conduct. And so in that case, it would have been better if a different assistant attorney general had been assigned to talk to me than the person who was talking to the Deputy Commissioner of Administration, Education. But Madam Chair, Representative Carpenter, we currently, whenever we talk to an assistant attorney general, just like any other state agency, are being billed, you know, for that time. They're keeping track of the time they're giving advice to our agency. So I think if there were a fiscal note from law, it would be indeterminate because we really don't know what legal advice or services we're going to need in any given year. Personnel things can come up. Things related to our programs can come up. And so just like any state agency, it really depends on the facts that drive the need for legal services. So that's kind of basically why there's probably, certainly why there's not a determinant fiscal note, and if there were one, it would say it depends on what sort of legal services ASCA requires in a given fiscal year. And Mr. Lampkin may have some other thoughts about that, but that's how I would describe the way we have used the Department of Law in the past and would continue to do so in future once it's very clear in our statute that they provide counsel. One more thing, Madam Chair, if I may. In the event that we needed outside counsel, that would not be a reimbursable service agreement between ASCA and law. That would require us to hire outside counsel. But I really think that's not very likely to happen. It's just in there because that's a term that we came to kind of as a compromise with the Department of Law to make sure that we would always have recourse to competent legal counsel going forward.
Representative Carpenter. Great, thank you. And we do have Director of the DMV, Jeffrey Schmitz, online to review fiscal note number 5, control code MQGLS. Welcome, Mr. Schmitz. If you could put yourself on the record and go over fiscal note number 5. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, committee members, my name for the record is Jeffrey Schmitz. I am the Director of Alaska DMV. With respect to the fiscal note that DMV submitted, it's a fairly simple estimate of what we felt, and it was just a, you know, just a pick of how many people would actually select to pay an additional fee, and that's reflected on our fiscal note in terms of what those revenues would be. I think we estimated it would be just over 3,000 people that would actually select to pay the additional fee versus paying no fee right now. So that was the basis of our fiscal note. Certainly, we don't actually know what the demand really will be. And at the time we put our fiscal note together, we didn't know what the council was thinking in terms of up to $50, what actual amount they would select. So I think our note was based on if they, in fact, selected the full $50, that's what the revenue amounts would be based on just estimates. So.
Great. Thank you very much. Questions on fiscal note number 5? Seeing none, thank you for being with us today. Anything further on Senate Bill 71?
I have a quick question.
Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Just very quickly, Mr. Schmitz, how are license plates distributed at DMV? If I go in and need a new plate, do I always get a choice, or do they sometimes just grab the next one available?
Madam Chair, committee members, again, Jeff Schmitz, Alaska DMV Director. You get a choice. When you come in to register your vehicle for the first time, you're offered a choice of either the yellow Last Frontier plates, the Bear plates, or the Artistic plates right now. So I heard you comment or somebody comment earlier that they were given whatever the next one was. That is not the correct procedure. I apologize for that experience for you, but you should have been offered an option to pick one of those three different plates.
Thank you.
Great, thank you. And with that, we will set Senate Bill 71 aside, and we'll take a brief at ease. Thank you, Mr. Brown and Mr. Lampkin, for being here. Brief at ease.
Thank you.
House Finance on the record at 9:39 a.m. Now we will go over House Bill 21, which is add faculty member, University Board of Regents by Representative Wohl. Welcome to House Finance, Representative Wohl. If you would place yourself on the record. Your staff, Ashley Carrick, is with you today, and go ahead and present your bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair Merrick, Co-Chair Foster, and members of the illustrious House Finance Committee. It's a pleasure to be here. As always, my name is Adam Wohl, representative from District 5 in Fairbanks. With me is Ashley Carrick, my very competent staffer, who will go through the slideshow and discuss the bill in great detail. I will just give a quick overview. This bill will add a faculty member to the Board of Regents for the University of Alaska. The faculty regents would serve a two-year term. Each campus would pick two. Each faculty senate at each campus would pick two. So there'd be six altogether in a pool, and the governor would pick one, and that person would have to be confirmed by the legislature. Faculty regent would have all the rights and privileges of other regents. Five states already have a faculty regent as part of their system. This has been requested for many years by the faculty, and it gives them a voting seat at the table. Right now, at a Board of Regents meeting, the Board of Regents sit at a table, and there's a place for faculty either at an adjoining table. Certainly, they're in the room. They can be asked questions, but they can't interject whenever they want. And most importantly, when the Board of Regents goes into executive session, which they do often, the faculty member is excluded, and a lot of the discussions and decisions happen in executive session. There's a student regent on the Board of Regents that's been on for a while, and they serve two-year terms as well. And this just adds parity. If you're going to include a student in these discussions of what happens at campus, I feel that you should also include a faculty member with what goes on in the university system. Plus, they have the insight and the experience of being able to offer differing opinions and again, insight because they work there. So with that, I will pass the baton off to Ms. Carrick, and we'll answer questions after, and we have an invited testifier.
Thank you, Ms. Carrick.
Thank you. For the record, Ashley Carrick, staff to Representative Wohl, and I'll keep this very brief as we do have an extremely knowledgeable invited testifier online today. The University of Alaska has a mission to inspire learning, advance and disseminate knowledge through teaching, research, and public service, and emphasize the North and its diverse peoples. The University of Alaska Board of Regents is an 11-member board, and it's responsible for helping guide the university towards its mission. The addition of a faculty regent to the board will serve to help advance this mission and provide for representation for this key university stakeholder group. And this is the purpose in bringing House Bill 21 before you today. So just briefly going over the composition of the board currently, there are 10 regents who serve eight-year terms, and there is also an 11th regent who is a student regent. This student regent serves a two-year term. They have full voting powers on the board. And then there's certain requirements that must be met for a student regent to be chosen. They must have a certain GPA, and the selection process is two students can be elected by their campus, and a nominee is chosen by the governor, subject to confirmation by the legislature. The current role of faculty with the Board of Regents is that the Faculty Alliance is allowed to make a report at each regent's meeting. And as Representative Wohl mentioned, the faculty are able to be called on to answer questions. However, they do not have speaking rights in general during the Board of Regents meetings. Looking at our state-by-state comparisons, there are 24 state university systems which have a student regent. There are also five, not six, that's a typo, university systems which have a faculty regent. And Vermont, at last check, was currently considering similar legislation to add a faculty and staff person to their board. There are also private institutions across the country which include a voting faculty regent as a part of their membership. I won't go through each of these examples today, but of the five states which do have a faculty regent as a voting member, I've listed on the next two slides the composition of those boards. And the main takeaway here is that each one of these boards, and this is true for all 50 states in their state university system, have dramatically different compositions for what a Board of Regents looks like. Most states have what they call their Board of Trustees, and this can vary dramatically in terms of numbers of members, how many members that are not at-large members, including faculty, students. It's a pretty diverse landscape out there in terms of governance for state university systems, and there's not really a one-size-fits-all approach here. So you can see with the rest of these systems what that looks like. So House Bill 21 will increase the number of regents from 11 to 12. The process is very similar to the current process for the student regent. The faculty senate of each of the three main campuses will put forward two nominees. The governor gets to choose from this list of six, one appointee, and that person is subject to confirmation by the legislature. A faculty member, much like the student regent, must meet certain requirements. They must be a tenured faculty person. They would serve a two-year term, just like the student regent, and they would have full powers as a regent for voting, travel to board meetings, and entering executive session, which, as Representative Wohl mentioned, is a current place where faculty are not allowed to attend. And in order for a vote of the Board of Regents to carry, a majority of the members are needed. And anecdotally, and I believe Dr. Meyer will speak to this as well, it's very common that the Board of Regents does vote unanimously on items. So this likely wouldn't be a difficult hurdle to meet. Just some additional benefits of a faculty regent. This is more than a seat at the table. We're inviting faculty as knowledgeable professionals to enter into discussions about governance. Again, faculty would be able to enter executive session. They'd be able to travel and attend board meetings across the state. And most importantly, they can vote. It improves the ability for faculty to provide stakeholder interest. There are many industry and community professionals currently on the Board of Regents, but somebody who has skin in the game is what we're looking for here. Additionally, that regent will be held to a standard of professionalism. They can recuse themselves from a conflicted vote, much like the student regent can. And this ensures that faculty, like students, are given a voting interest in university affairs. And we're happy to take any questions the committee has, as well as our invited testifier.
Great. Representative Lebon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess several thoughts occur to me for the bill sponsor or for Ms. Carrick. Two selectees per campus, both by the Faculty Senate. Why not one selectee by the Faculty Senate and one by the Chancellor? Was that discussed?
It's Representative Wohl.
Through the chair, Representative Bond, no, that was not discussed.
Then I guess for follow-up, why two instead of just one?
Through the chair, Representative Bond, I think having two per campus, similar to students, gives there more choices. So the governor can pick from a larger pool and gives more discretion and more options.
I guess this would be more comment than question, but it would appear to me that you would have commonality and choice. If it's the same group picking potential representatives, you'd have some commonality in the choice of the group. Whereas if the chancellor had a chance to weigh in and select a faculty member, then you'd have a little diversity in the choice. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lebon. And with that, we will move to our invited testifier this morning. It's Dr. Julie Jackmeyer, Chair of the UA Faculty Alliance. Dr. Meyer, welcome to House Finance. Please put yourself.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you guys giving me the time to talk to you. I'm looking very forward to helping you understand our rationale for wanting a faculty added to the Board of Regents.
Great. Thank you. Please place yourself on the record.
Yes, ma'am. My name is Julie Meyer. I am the chair of the University of Alaska Faculty Alliance and the past president of the University of Alaska Fairbanks Faculty Senate. The Faculty Alliance is comprised of the three Senate leaders from each three universities, UAA, UAF, and UAS. We represent all the faculty from across the university system. Adding faculty regents to the Board of Regents is one of the most important things that you can do for the University of Alaska system. It is not something that we're asking for the sake of faculty. It is something that should be done for the sake of students, the university, and the state. Currently, the Board of Regents hears and listens primarily to one voice, and that is the voice of the administration. The voice of the administration is a very important voice and should always be a primary voice in the discussion. but there are other very important constituent groups that have profound knowledge and experience and that are crucial to the well-being of and the success of students and the state. These voices are not currently allowed to fully participate in the Board of Regents process. Unfortunately, this has led to the Regents making ill-informed decisions that negatively affect students and the future of the university system. With respect to the number of Regents, officially there are currently 11 Regents, except that one Regent did step down last September, and so the Board has been working with 10 Regents since then. Given that most of their votes are unanimous and haven't affected their ability to get the job done with an even number of Regents. Faculty are uniquely positioned to bring a knowledgeable, positive perspective to the Board of Regents. Many of us have worked at the university for quite a number of years. We have a deep and broad understanding of every aspect of the university, including teaching, conducting research, working with community members, agencies, and students. Faculty understand what it takes to ensure that students are provided with the education that they seek and are successful in attaining their goals. Through our service component, many of us work in governance. Generally, much of that critical knowledge is lacking on the Board of Regents. Other public universities have already included a regent on their boards. The legislature was wise to add a student regent so that that all-important voice could be represented, and that position has worked well. It is time to add a faculty regent who can add an even deeper, more thorough understanding of the importance of the university and what it takes to help students and the university succeed with an eye to the future of Alaska. A faculty regent at the table can help the other regents be better informed, result in better decisions being made, and help the Board of Regents more effectively lead the university system in a positive direction for the students and state of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Meyer. Representative LeBon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm going to ask Dr. Meyer the same question I asked the bill sponsor regarding the two choices per campus by the Faculty Senate. And was there any discussion about allowing each campus chancellor to have a say in this by selecting one of those two candidates?
It's been a while since we've discussed this, since this bill's been in the legislature for so long, but the reality is these senates are not just a group of 40 people who make decisions and talk about things in a vacuum all by themselves. They really do go back to their constituent groups, as you all do, and talk to them. And so they truly represent all the faculty of their university. So typically the way things are done is that's how it's done. So the problem I see with having the chancellors potentially appoint this faculty member or forward a faculty member is that then the chancellors tend to pick a faculty member that's more administration friendly, if you will. Not that we're unfriendly, but I think what we really need is people that are, first of all, knowledgeable about governance. That's why the Senate would be, you know, a key to picking the person. Because if you get someone coming in on a board, I was on the board of GAME, and it takes about a year to get up to speed if you have no experience whatsoever. So I think it's important, and I think what the Senates will do and the faculty in general, they will pick a knowledgeable person who's got not just great experience and knowledge as a faculty member, but also great knowledge and experience as far as governance. And they'll be able to hit the ground running. So I think that we really want this person, this faculty regent, to be someone who's very much a faculty member first, and when I say a faculty member first, that's a person that puts students first, because that's why we're there.
Follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if this bill were to be amended to allow each campus chancellor to have a choice to make a selection for a candidate to forward to the governor, would that ruin the bill, or would that be a workable and acceptable amendment?
Personally, I would be against that amendment for the reasons I just stated. I think that we need a faculty member who is independent and who is willing to really put faculty and therefore students first without an eye toward pleasing the chancellor. The reality is that, and so I guess I would, we would have to accept it if it was amended that way, but I think it would not be a positive amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, and thank you, Dr. Meyer, for being with us today. We are short on time. We'll take a final question from Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you. Through the chair, I was going to ask the bill sponsor why the decision was made for one faculty member. Had you considered a second one to keep an odd number? Just as we face organizational challenges in our body, I wonder if it's not best to have an odd number.
Thank you for the question. Through the chair, Representative Rasmussen. We didn't discuss two faculty members. Early on in the inception of this bill, and other institutions have done this, they put one faculty, one staff. So employee, a regular rank and file employee as opposed to a professor. And I withdrew that suggestion for now. I figured let's just try with one. It will be an even number. And initially the bill said the president would be the tiebreaker, and we removed that section of the bill as well. And many of the votes are unanimous or overwhelmingly one way or the other. And if there was a vote that was, say, a 6-5 vote, and the faculty member joining made it a 6-6, or an even number made it a tie vote, then that's probably a time they need to go back and sort of figure out what it is would get it to a non-tie vote, and I think that's good. And I guess the last part I'll make, and it's certainly a valid suggestion to add two. I just figure let's start with one. That might be tricky enough. But I guess my last point, and I know we're running short on time, is during some past years, there was a lot of, I'd say, turmoil within the Board of Regents and discussions of unifying into a single university and a big stir up over that. And some faculty members actually had a vote of no confidence for the president. And one of their complaints was they weren't really included. Their voice wasn't heard. And the Northwest Commission on Colleges and Universities, an accreditation organization, came to the same conclusion that faculty has to be included more. And that's why that's another reason for this bill, is to get them at the table and have their voices heard and not closed out in executive session. But long answer to a short question, no, we didn't consider two faculty. And I think the even number is still workable.
Follow-up?
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I think it's obviously very important to have the boots on the ground perspective. And I do absolutely support that. I would off record maybe have a further conversation with you about looking at two. It looks like the fiscal note's only a couple $1,000, so it's not a major cost. And, you know, having two members would still be a minority on the Board of Regents. So, but I appreciate the bill coming forward. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. And at another hearing, we will have Mr. Hutchinson, the legislative liaison, go over that fiscal note. So with that, we are going to wrap up. This concludes the agenda for this morning. Our next meeting will be this afternoon at 1:30. We will consider House Bill 289, Marijuana Industry Task Force, and Senate Bill 222, extending the Physical and Occupational Therapy Board. So with that, at 9:58 a.m., we are adjourned. Thank you.